Blog Talk Radio.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. There's a lot of mayday protests out there that have turned violent and stupidly so. You've got groups of people across the United States whose only purpose in life is to protest and resist Trump as if he were the devil incarnate. So now it appears obvious that Trump is controlling everything. He's controlling every time he gets a twitch, every time he sneezes, these people develop a new theory that it was promoted by Russia or fascism or Hitlerism. And he must be stopped at all possible costs. In the meantime, though, it seems like the guy is doing a fairly good job of trying to get things going where he has to compromise, such as on the wall. He's doing it now. I don't know if he has to compromise. I assume that in his mind, it doesn't help him to not build the wall. So he obviously was going to, in the back of his mind anyway, remaneuver the pieces on the chessboard. But I believe the wall will be built. We just have to see. The problem, though, really, if you think about it, it's not the Democrats, it's the Republicans. And you've got a group of people who are super self-righteous, who think that they represent the only possible way forward. And that's, I'm not talking about the Democrats, I'm talking about the Republicans. They refuse to compromise. And maybe their refusal to compromise in some cases is warranted, but the overall impact is to take the majority that we have and throw it down the toilet. So anyway, Mayday, International Workers' Day, is actually became a protest day in my old stomping grounds in Portland, Oregon. Portland is very liberal. Oregon is stupidly liberal, I would say that. They think they're 20 years ahead when they're 20 years behind. That's the only way that, I think they're still wearing mullets out there. But here's a little bit on the protests from CNN.
Explain about how many protesters there were. Police are describing them as anarchists. We saw a video of the fire being set on some newspapers, some flares being thrown and windows kicked out. What was it like?
It was fairly intense. I mean, at one point the police exclaimed, oh, they've got a slingshot. And so, I mean, there was like rocks flying around, like as you saw the newsstand set on fire. And I'd say there was definitely more than three arrests. I mean, I want to say like eight or nine. So there was more than a few arrests.
And my understanding is that the permit for the protest was revoked because the police say because of the actions of what they described as the anarchists. It did seem like that these people, men and women were in black, were basically kind of moving relatively freely through the streets. Is that, I was looking at it from the air and a few cameras on the ground. Was there much control over where they were going?
I mean, police would try to cut them off. Like, for example, they would have the bridges out of downtown blocked off because that's a target of protest. But like what had happened was is they had kind of like mixed in with the permitted annual May Day protest. And so, they were having to deal with, the police were having to deal with two protests at once, basically that had mixed together. And then once the rocks started flying and the smoke bombs came out, people were throwing the Pepsi cans of Pepsi at the police, full cans, shook up. So once that started happening, the police in the city, they just canceled the entire thing and urged everyone to go home. Then they kind of followed the protesters, snakes flew downtown behind them, maybe like 80, 90. Ish black clad protesters, and then they were throwing I don't know what you call them, flashbangs or noise, very loud noise booms, and then eventually they cracked down outside of City Hall and basically started tackling people.
So at this point, are those protesters who the police were describing as anarchists, is that pretty much done now?
It looks like it. The riot police actually maybe about two and a half minutes ago, the riot police drove away. And, there's still some people that I recognize here as protesters. Who knows if something will pop off from this. I mean, the legal observers are still here, the local media.
All right, so you get the feeling there. Anarchy is a movement that is associated with a couple of different groups, but the main group that I'm aware of is that there's a benign anarchy it's the end of Marxism and the beginning is capitalism, and then you have socialism and communism, and then supposedly what's supposed to happen is that as people come together and work as one, there's no longer a compunction. There no longer has to be an order that is put onto the Marxists from outside. It's an internal order, and all of the, basically the government falls away and it's benign anarchy. And the people work together as one, and you've gotten rid of all the sources of conflict, mankind, class warfare, wealth. That's Marxist theory. Maybe not much of a theory, but on the other hand, that's where these people are coming from. Some of them now, there's others. Probably a lot of these people are other types of anarchists, and which I'll tell you about in a second. Here's a little bit more on May Day protests. Were they pro-immigrant, anti-worker wage? May Day, May Day. From Tucker.
International May Day protests got violent in Paris, but the French weren't the only ones taking to the streets across the United States. Protesters march in opposition to the enforcement of American immigration laws. In the Bay Area, marchers demanded open borders, shouting, "No ban, no raids, no walls, sanctuary for all." Steve Choi is executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition. He took part in today's protests, and he joins us now. Steve, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me here.
So I'm 47, so I've watched a lot of May Day protests. Imagine my surprise watching an International Workers' Day protest that was designed over 100 years ago to highlight the concerns of workers, foremost among them, of course, wages, arguing on behalf of policies that would lower wages. And I thought, boy, global capitalism is pretty tricky. It got you guys to advocate on behalf of the Chamber of Commerce. How'd they do that?
Tucker, it had nothing to do with that.
Oh.
Really, I was with 5,000 people in Foley Square and hundreds of thousands all across the country. And we were there to make a statement about the shared values that we have as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that immigrants are part of the solution. Immigrants have been making America great for centuries now. Immigrants
right.
are workers, they're business owners, they're employers, they're neighbors and families and friends.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to join with hundreds of thousands of people all across this country in peaceful protest to make that statement that we are going to rise up and that we are going to fight back.
Okay. And I mean, I kind of agree with what you said. I mean, I'm for immigrants and they're all those things and they're great, but they're also one of the reasons that the wages for American working class families have stayed stagnant or declined, because when you have an overabundance of something, in this case, labor, its value falls. There's no controversy about that. You're advocating for that. You're advocating, in effect, for lower wages for workers. And I just don't know why.
That's absolutely not what I'm arguing for. In fact, we said today that it's important to say that fair wages for everybody is important. Here's the facts. The facts are that immigrants contribute so much to the American economy. Here in New York, the state comptrollers estimate they add $230 billion in economic value. They pay $10 billion in taxes here in New York City. And New York City happens to be one of the biggest cities and is the immigrant capital of the world. We know in New York City that immigrants add tremendous value as workers, but also as employers and small business owners.
For sure, but I think I want you to track with me here, Steve. These are average working people. So let's say I work for $12 an hour and someone shows up who will work for $7. Do my wages go up or do they go down? They go down, and that's happened across the country. There's no debate about that. A lot of studies show it. The Chamber of Commerce and big employers are totally for it. But now you're for it, too. And I'm just a little confused. Are they paying you to be for it? Like, why would you be for that? It doesn't help working people.
Well, they certainly aren't paying me for it.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure about that.
Okay.
Here's what I would say, Tucker. The fact is, it's not that simple. We live in a global economy. We don't live in a simple kind of equation where one person's wages go up and another go down. It's not a zero-sum game. And when you look at the impact that immigrants have, it's tremendous. And this is something that people see not only here in New York City, but all across New York State as well, Buffalo and Rochester, even in places like Utica.
Okay. Those are all places that are deeply in trouble, as you know, where the middle class is dying. The middle class is dying in New York City, as you may know. I mean, I would think you'd follow this since you're on TV arguing on behalf of it. So let me just ask you a couple simple questions to see to what extent you thought this through. We have about 1.1 million people coming here legally every year. What's the optimum number? How many immigrants should we let in if we want to help the workers you say you represent?
Look, I'm not an expert in terms of the economic, the specific numbers of immigrants coming in. Here's what I will tell you is that those cities that I just mentioned, not only New York City, but Buffalo, Albany, Rochester, those places, they're in dire economic straits, not because of immigrants, but immigrants are actually part of the way forward. And that's been proven time and time again. Okay. Immigrants add value. They stabilize neighborhoods. They pay taxes. And they're great workers and business owners. We should be figuring out how to get more immigrants into those
more
areas,
immigrants.
Not fewer.
But you don't know how many. You're making the case, but you haven't actually thought through how many is a good number because you're not going to get into the economics of it. But you're arguing the economics of it. So let me just ask you one more simple question. How is it if I work in a depressed post-industrial town in, say, the service industry, if a bunch of people come in who are willing to work for less than I'm used to working for, why is that good for me?
It's good because immigrants will come in, and we've actually seen this upstate. Well, immigrants will come in, they will help to stabilize neighborhoods, they work, they patronize local businesses, and they spend their money as well. It's absolutely unquestioned.
So why have
value to these places?
Then let me just ask you a simple question. Why haven't unemployment rates gone down in those places? Just pick a town. How about Lewiston, Maine? Which has got a ton of Somalis settled there. They're immigrants. Employment rates have not gone down. Unemployment has gone up. Why is that?
So immigrants are part of the solution, but they're not the solution in and of themselves.
I would say that a place like
New York City, when you look at the economy over the past 25 years, the economy has gone up at the same time the immigrant right has gone up as well.
This is total nonsense, but I want to point out to you that if you study the slave economies of the ancient world or America, Britain, you cannot sustain a normal economy off slavery because the slaves come in and disrupt the labor market so much that the average person cannot afford to be hired because there's a slave out there to take their place, which I'm sure is the next wave of that is robots, but this idea that the more immigrant, illegal workers that you bring in and the unemployment goes down, that's impossible. I mean, that's just absolutely idiotic. Okay. I wrote an article in, 2011 called "Will Barack Try Syndicalism to Cripple America?" Anarcho-syndicalism is one of the terms that you hear getting thrown around. And basically, it would be a way to take over America through unions. And what you do is you take the union, you take away the normal purpose of the union just to protect the workers and advance their interests, and you turn them into revolutionary hothouses, and they are then used to take over the country piece by piece, labor or economic sector by economic sectors. The unions rise up and they take over, and they end up owning the industry that they're working in, and you get rid of basically, I mean, it's just communism, in a, I guess, in a sense. So that here's a quote from the Catholic Encyclopedia that I included. Syndicalism is associations of working men for furtherance of common economic interests. Three influences combined in formation of this new system. It's relatively new in America, say the last 100 years. Revolutionary unionism, anarchism, and socialism. The primary object of revolutionary syndicalism is destruction of the existing order of society, expropriation or taking over, abolition of capital, and elimination of the entire system of wages. Its basic doctrine is the teaching of the class struggle. The state must be violently combated even when it enacts measures beneficial to the laborer. Think about that. It doesn't matter. The union gets rid of this purpose of defending the worker in advancing their interests. Even if it destroys the interests of the worker, it's irrelevant because they're going for a higher good. And that's what I think you should really consider in a lot of these things from the time that Obama got into office. Working for a higher good that maybe doesn't value the sacrifice of the present person so that we can get pushed on to a new era of socialism, globalism, or whatever. All right. The state must be violently combated even when it enacts measures beneficial to the laborer, since all reforms are deceptive unless forced by the syndicalist workers themselves. Syndicalist, socialized, and radical revolutionary workers that are formed, the agreement is formed within the union. There are two divisions of mankind, employers and the employed, and anything which can foment bitterness and disagreement between these two is a triumph for the worker. All this is pure Marxian doctrine. So you cause disruption, and the whole purpose of Marxism is to create a revolution. And they believe that by an automatic process, the revolution will cause socialism to come. So see these things through these lenses. All of this stuff is not unconnected. It's not happening by accident or just the result of a little bit of frustration. It's all micromanaged from up on high, what they call the vanguard of the proletariat. Proletariat, factory workers. That shows you how antiquated Marxism is. The factory workers of the proletariat, the vanguard of the factory workers, is the intelligentsia. It's the what we call the what's the nasty term that we throw around, the elites. It is a group of elites that comes out of the university. They're the only ones that have the right to lead the workers because only they have studied Marx and other thinkers. Only they have paid the price to understand it. Only they can lead. There's leadership by these people, and then there's what they call tyranny of the proletariat. It's a tyranny by the elites. And after the tyranny of the elites, then you're supposed to enter into this period of, well, socialism, Marxism, or communism, and then into benign anarchy. It's all an insane method to try to make things better. It just, in the name of making things better, destroys everything in its wake. 624 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23-1450. We'll take a little break. We got more Wes Montgomery. Caravan. Hey, it's Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly. Bob, how are you?
No, what's going on, Bob? Hold on just a second, okay? About to go back on the air. All right, so all right, I have a lot more stories for you. I have a lot more stories for you, but first we have to talk to Bob. What's going on, Bob?
God bless you, my good friend. Kelly, the reason I'm calling you is it has something to do to add what you've been talking about this morning. Have you heard anything about what's going on at City Hall or what went on Monday?
No, what happened?
Well, I did get the opportunity to address the council and everything, and I jumped all over Greg Smith, Mayor Pro Tem, because I just felt that it was time was necessary. But what I had told them, basically, to speed everything up, is that I feel that it's going to take a presidential decree in order for us here in the United States to the federal government anyway to stop shock treatment. So that's just, I don't want to elaborate. But I thought it was a start, you know. So from there, I'm going to be very busy. But I do want you to know that I'm going to be very supportive of you because you've been very helpful, you know. And I appreciate you very much. And if there's anything that I can do to be of service of any of other people to save a life, I'm with you. Okay, Kelly?
Yeah, well, did you give Mayor Ken all my love?
No, I decided to go ahead and get you a gift certificate instead. But next time I see him, I will, okay? Because you know how to communicate, and I really believe that you belong on the city council.
Well, I don't think the city council doesn't believe that.
You know, if Gil Sorg can do it, I think he can do a better job. You know, so.
Well, Gil Sorg is undoubtedly a great statesman, much like the mayor.
Yeah, but he's from Montana, you know, and we don't need people from Montana telling us.
Well, wait a second. You're going to get rid of people from Montana. That means you would get rid of Billy Garrett. He was, I believe, he was vested with the important duty of protecting endangered species up in Dakota or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, but see, you got to understand that, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but you and I are ahead of the game. We're not walking around with an earring in our left ear. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, but what I'm saying.
Wait a minute. Earring in the left ear, spotted owl on the right shoulder. Get it right, please.
Oh, I know about that.
Yeah.
I know about that. See, that's why I say you're more informed. That's why I call you the voice. I don't care what the Hispanics are saying, okay? So I love them. I love you. I was able to address the council. I got to see Greg and talk to him because he's associated with State Senator Mary Kay Pepin.
Uh-huh.
So I got to let him know, you know, that I'm not an enemy. I'm a friend.
Is he a Pepinite?
I don't know. All I know is the poor tower is falling apart. I believe you go to Abraham's.
That's too bad.
You're good people, okay?
All right.
I'm going with Steinborn, but I sure do like Berkshire Hathaway. So
I hear you.
Okay?
Hey, okay, man. Have a good day. All right. Calls me Kenny on the way out. Here's the sound. Bob, this is nothing personal, but. These are million-dollar sound effects. We got to use them. All right, where was I? All right, I've got a little bit of disturbing news for you. A guy nailed to a tree, believe it or not. Check this out from KRQE. A guy found nailed to a tree in the Bosque.
Good evening. A cleanup site in Albuquerque's Bosque turned into a disturbing crime scene this morning. Workers found a man screaming, nailed to a tree.
News 13's Jeannie Nguyen is live along the Bosque near Central with what we know at this point. Jeannie?
Dean and Jessica. It happened about a quarter mile behind me this morning right here in the bosque. Someone used a thick 3-inch nails to hammer that man's hands into the trees.
I come out here quite regularly, 2 to 3 times a week.
It's a quiet getaway from the hustle and bustle of the city. The bosque is a place residents like Richard Rubio and Alicia Baca like to come for some exercise.
Actually, I feel very safe. I'm a native from Albuquerque, and I've always come here since I was a little girl.
But this morning at around 8:30, the popular bike and running trail turned into a crime scene after city cleanup crews heard cries for help.
Does that something like that surprise you that it happened here?
It actually does.
A man's hands nailed crucifix style to two trees. Residents like Rubio says it's shocking to hear something so gruesome could happen in such a peaceful place.
Well, I'm pretty surprised. I come out here quite regularly, 2 to 3 times a week, and I've never seen anything like that.
But for residents like Baca, an incident like this isn't going to keep her from coming here to get some fresh air.
I'm going to continue coming here. I don't feel any danger or harm at all.
Now, police say that man is alive. He's being treated for his injuries at UNM Hospital. As for why someone would do this to him, police say he is not cooperating. Dean, back to you.
All right, Jeannie, thank you. Now, this happened at about 8:30 in the morning today, north of the Central Bridge on the east side of the river, past the Botanical Gardens. Police are asking for anyone with information on this crime to give them a call.
Totally bizarre. All right, let's go to some local news. AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. It's 6:34. Just to let you know that I did go in and talk to Carlos yesterday. Carlos is well, until recently was working here. And as you recall, he did the election night coverage recently, and I get along with him very well, and he's always been very pleasant to me. He informed me and stressed repeatedly that he was being falsely charged in this false claims. And he did get out yesterday. He bonded out. So I just want to let you know, there's always two sides to every story. And it's very, very important that we all remember that we are innocent until proven guilty in this system. And I really think that, you know, regardless of the charge, we should be willing to give other people a little bit of, you know, well, I don't know what how to call it. As an attorney, I want my clients to be, and I haven't picked up his case, by the way. I just went in there as a little show of solidarity and to just see if there's anything I could do for him. Because in this system, everything happens through the attorneys. Now, if a person in a criminal case can't afford an attorney, then the state supplies them with one through the public defender. And so it's a beautiful system the way that it's set up. Everybody has an advocate, and through the genius of the American model of understanding the law, what happened is there was a time, as you probably are aware, when law was much more primitive, when everything was much more primitive, and there was a point when people retained during these inquisitions or for a case, they would retain someone to represent them that would fight. And now there were different ways that truth was ascertained. And, you know, sometimes it would be a person had to hold on to a red hot bar of iron for 3 seconds. And if the wounds healed without infection, they would be cleared, you know, this type of thing, or thrown in the water. If they sink, they're innocent. If they float, they're guilty. Now, what happens if you sink and you're innocent, but you drown? So these ways of finding the truth were very primitive. But through the work of Henry the Great in England, Henry the Great was part because he fought off the Viking intruders and built many fortifications. He was also great because he was a genuinely pious man. He was the first person to translate the Psalms into English for a couple of centuries, I think. And he also studied the law of the Old Testament. He didn't bring the law in, and that's what I was trying to tell you. It's very mistaken these groups come along and say, we're going to apply the Old Testament law. What he did was he studied the Old Testament law, and he took the logic and he took the standards out of that law, you know, and he applied that to the society, and that was the beginning of the common law. And the common law, I would think, is the greatest, the Anglo-American common law tradition is the greatest law, legal, it's the greatest legal system in history without parallel. So today we have people who, if they get in trouble, the state provides a public defender, and then the public defender goes in. They don't fight for him physically like in the old days, but they fight over the evidence, they fight over the charges, they fight over bond and, you know, through motions and everything. So it is an unbelievably rich and beautiful system. And so, you know, if Carlos couldn't get a private attorney, get a public defender, but somebody to come in and challenge the state. And, you know, in a lot of these countries around the world, including Mexico, the state owns the right to the prosecution and the defense, which is very scary. So I went in and talked to him. He seemed to be in pretty good spirits considering the situation. And his main message to me was that he was innocent, but I think it's important to suspend belief a little bit and give people the benefit of the doubt. Not everybody that is charged is guilty, and I've seen some crazy things occur in court cases. So just to let you know. All right. And man, I've got so many topics today, but all right. I want to get to, there's a group warning against a foot race in New Mexico, Bear Country. An environmentalist, I'm getting this out of the Sun News, are criticizing the decision to repeat a backcountry trail race after a long distance runner was attacked by a bear who had cubs last year at a National Park Service preserve in northern New Mexico. And Caldera National Preserve, and they had to euthanize the bear. But anyway, I thought that was kind of entertaining. They should do the bear run. They should make them run naked until the bears come out and go after them. All right, I've got for you, I actually need to take a break right here, but 6:43, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. I hope if you ever have a friend, somebody you work with who gets in trouble, you go and see if you can visit them or give them a little bit of feedback and just understand that people are sometimes falsely accused in the system as well. But that on the other hand, and this is more of a Christian idea, just because someone is guilty of a crime doesn't mean they're no longer a human being. And it doesn't mean that if you talk to them, that you're, even if they're guilty, that you're buying into the crime, you know? So 6:44, there is an argument you could make from the Christian tradition. Christ acts as an attorney for a believer in front of Satan. He defends the believers to Satan. And then at the last judgment, Christ steps in front of the accused and takes the punishment. He takes the, you know, so that's my understanding. 6:45, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. Got local weather for you. I've got a little clip here for you from Samantha Bee. I don't know for, I don't get TV, so I don't really watch any of these shows per se. But, and I'm trying to get this clip to play. It's not cooperating, but there is something that's kind of come up in the, I'm trying to multitask here. There's something that's come up in the political and really the social. I don't know if this computer's cooperating at all right now, but there's something that has come up that is, it's notable, and I've mentioned it a number of times because I find it so unpleasant and disturbing, is this idea that the people on the left are the, and this is kind of where the Frankies of the world are coming from. To be on the left is to mean that you're educated. To be on the right means you're an ignoramus. And the only explanation for what's happening in the country is you've got a number of educated and smart people who would call themselves liberals, and then you've got all of the rest of the rednecks and hicks and ignoramuses, people who are not trained into caring about the right things or who are not smart enough to get into that. And so that's the problem. And so what these people do, and it's increasingly, you know, you've got somebody like, I'm going to have to take another break and cue this clip up to make sure it's the right one. These people, their basic reaction is to treat people the way that they should be treated. If you don't support liberalism, you're an idiot, and you need to be treated like one until you repent or basically, you're kind of banned to liberal hell. Now, here's an article from National Review by a guy by the name of David French, who they had asked to run for president once upon a time about a year ago. I'll just read you the beginning of it. It's interesting. America's smug liberal problem. It's hard to win converts with mockery, and this came out yesterday in the National Review. The only people who can't recognize that our nation has a, quote, smug liberal problem are smug liberals. Case in point, smug liberal and television comedian Samantha Bee, who on Sunday on CNN's Jake Tapper was asked by Tapper to react to a pre-election Ross Do That column, he's a New York Times guy, that called out Bee and other late night comics in part for creating a comedy world of, quote, hectoring monologues, hectoring meaning to make fun of or to ridicule, full of comedians who are less comics than propagandists, liberal explanatory journalists with laugh lines. And I believe that Ross Do That, when he wrote this article, said the reason Trump is in office is because of these people, because the people on the right were so infuriated by this treatment that they decided to take to settle it at the ballot box. So, and then he says, we're all familiar with the style. It features the generous use of selective clips from Fox News, copious amounts of mockery, and a quick Wikipedia and Google search level of factual understanding. The basic theme is always the same. Look at how corrupt, evil, and stupid our opponents are. Look at how obviously correct we are, and laugh at my marvelous and clever explanatory talent. It's like sitting through an especially ignorant and heavy-handed Ivy League lecture, complete with the sycophantic crowd lapping up every word. And so I was kind of alerted to this fact when they did the journalist dinner and Trump didn't show up, and they got this guy to come in, some Indian comedian. He was so awful, it was absolutely surreal. And I think what I'm going to do is take my last break right here, and I'll come back and let's see. Let me do this. Let me come back, and I've got to try to get a little comedy on here for you, and we'll start the next hour with this topic because it's pretty rich. 523-1450 AM, Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell. And The computer's stuck. We'll be right back. Okay, so I've got a. I'm trying to expand the universe of comedians. I know that everybody loves Gaffigan, but here's a guy, Mike Kaplan, MYQ. It's just kind of a strange comedy piece here, but here you go.
My favorite customer at the cafe was a guy who asked for a ham and cheese croissant. And he's my favorite because we did not sell those ever in the years that I'd worked there. Years. He didn't see it on the menu. He didn't see it in the case. He just wanted it. So he asked for it, which is kind of beautiful, right? Maybe he was doing it all day. Ham and cheese croissant, please. This is a hardware store. Ham and cheese croissant, please. I'm just jogging. In a hardware store. We're both weird. He got close. We had croissants. Just not that kind. We had four kinds. We had plain, spinach, chocolate, almond. One time when I said that at a show, a guy yelled out, I think he thought I was trying to trick him. He was like, that's only three! Plain, spinach, chocolate, almond. I'm like, which two words do you think are one thing? I hope spinach, chocolate. You know, you got your plain, you got your spinach, chocolate, got your almond, your basic croissant flavors. But I like it. He got to do what he wanted to do. He asked for a thing, and that's all we know is what we want, and ask for it. And I got to do what I wanted to do as a retailer, which is nothing, laugh in his face, tell him no, say the customer is not right, finally, right? Verifiably, you're wrong, sorry, sir. But that didn't even faze him. He was like, oh, you're out? So confident that it shook me. I was like, are we out? Is it possible to be out of a thing you were never in? Does anybody in this room right now have a ham and cheese croissant? No? Oh, so you're all out? Everyone here? Hundreds of people? Everybody in the world, pretty much. Almost every person is out of ham and cheese croissants billions of people. There's a major shortage. It's not in the news at all. Nobody is talking about the ham and cheese croissants dearth in this day and age. Life is really more about the ham and cheese croissants that you don't have. You know what I mean?
All right. Somewhat bizarre, but a little bit different. And we'll take you out here with a little bit of Wes. Can never get enough Wes. But all right. So I'm going to come back in the next hour and focus a little bit on whether liberalism in its kind of crazy need to always be right or run the show is destroying the ability for people to talk about important ideas. 6:59, and there's like 20 different other topics for you. I wanted to get into the diet a little bit more, that they say can influence diabetes and cancer as well. We'll be back after break on the hour. Thanks for tuning in. It's real great to spend time with you on AM Las Cruces 523-1450 with Kelly O'Connell on KOBE. All right, so I want to get into this story that I mentioned to you, but first let me get into a story that was out of Fox News, which is New Mexico's Real ID rules have forced court cases to go off the charts. And hold on one second here. All right, so the article was published May 1st, and New Mexico's real ID rules have forced court caseloads to go off the charts. For decades, New Mexico residents didn't give much thought to the name on their government-issued IDs. Sometimes they changed it, though not legally, but sometimes they didn't care. But with the Real ID Act, stricter standards have come into play, and so many people are flooding into the court systems to get their documents taken care of, their names fixed in court filings and such. Presiding Civil Division District Court Judge Shannon Bacon said in her 7 years on the bench she has never seen such an influx of people petitioning the courts to change their name, and it's all from Real ID. And the Santa Fe New Mexican reports about 1,400 state residents filed name change requests between January 1 and April 11, compared to 1,700 for all of 2016. And one of the issues is that some of these people have court documents for past cases in which their name is misspelled. And Ben Cloutier, Director of Communications for the New Mexico Taxation and Revenue Department, which is overseeing this the state's official document, said many people illegally change their names and cannot provide documents to demonstrate name traceability in order to get real ID credentials. So they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. So anyway, this is a real big deal. In 2016, our own Susana Martinez signed into law HB 99, which reformed the state's driver license laws, quote, to ensure that dangerous criminals and illegal immigrants should no longer flock to New Mexico to obtain a driver's license. So anyway, just to let you know, there's some chaos going on up north, and it's all over the state as well. All right, so here is this conversation with Samantha Bee, who my sister thinks is the greatest thing since penicillin, and I find this lady to be trite and totally predictable. These people that are called political comedians are, to me, not funny. I mean, I'm not saying politics can't be funny, but I haven't seen it with people like Samantha Bee. So anyway, here's Samantha Bee talking about the smug liberal problem with Jake Tapper, and this is from yesterday.
As part, not part of the reason why Hillary lost, mm-hmm. but part of the problem, part of the liberal America's problem. Ross Douthat specifically wrote this column. Hillary Clinton's Samantha Bee.
I know.
I didn't.
So flattering.
I didn't know that there was a Samantha Bee problem, but let me read part of it to you. The Democratic Party's problem in the age of Trump isn't really Jimmy Fallon, who you had criticized and others have criticized for mm-hmm. being too soft on Trump. Its problem is Samantha Bee, not Bee alone, of course, but the entire phenomenon that she embodies, the rapid colonization of new cultural territory by an ascendant social liberalism. First, what's your response? And second of all, how does it feel to be, you know, the face of the problem?
Oh my God, my name was in an article. It's me. It's not racism. It's just me. No, you know what? I'll wait for all that evidence to roll in, and then I'll make up my mind after that.
So just because there was no backup, it was just
it's one person's opinion.
Let me ask you a question. Does he have a larger? And you've addressed this on your show.
Mm-hmm.
So remove yourself from it. Does he have a point about smug liberals? I'm not talking about you, but is there a smug liberal problem?
You know, that is something that I can't really, I mean, I just can't take responsibility for the way the election turned out. I just absolutely I can't. Is there a smug liberal problem?
You told her not
problem?
To go to Wisconsin.
I don't think there is. Like, I do the show for me and for people like me, and I don't really care how the rest of the world sees it, quite frankly. That's great. We make a show for ourselves. We put it out in the world. We birth it, and then the world receives it however they want to receive it.
All right, so that's part of the problem right there, is that communication, if you're just communicating to yourself, or as they say in the church, preaching to the choir.
This is a strange question.
Pardon me. You've got to have, I mean, there's got to be some attempt to reach across from where you're located and try to communicate to other people, in my opinion, that goes without saying, but that's why I think a lot of this stuff is like people putting their fingers in their ears and kind of humming loudly, that anybody would dare to confront them and suggest that their ideas are not up to snuff, and that, God forbid, that they're doing anything to harm the country. So this leads to another issue, which is Stevens, who moved from the Wall Street Journal to the New York Times. And in his first column for the Times, Stevens, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner, and he's a conservative who's anti-Trump, got up and said there needs to be more of an effort to study both sides of the issue. This is, you know, this is one of the most simple points in the history of education, that you have to study both sides of an issue to understand it. And so when he put this in there into the New York Times, the predictable happened, and people flipped out. And there were a number of letters that were written into the New York Times that people just said, we're dropping it. We can't take it anymore. This is proved science. And we had talked about global warming the other day. But the issue was global warming, and he said, basically, let me go to the article to see if I can find any of the clips there. Well, it was just, I mean, it was not really that big of a deal. I mean, basically he stated that I guess his point was that two sides on global warming weren't really communicating with one another, and they had to study the other side. But I mean, he really, I think, stated that people on the left who are so convinced that global warming exists need to study the other side of the issue. And that fact that he raised this, which is, here's my concern. This is an idea that is, it goes without saying that you have to study an entire topic to say that you know it. And so how do you avoid from being propagandized? How do any of us avoid being propagandized? By doing that, we look at the whole topic, and you look at it from the right and you look at it from the left, or you look at it from the pro and you look at it from the con, however you want to call it. Because a lot of issues don't have right or left. They're just one opinion or the other. And then you let it filter over your brain and decide which one makes the most sense. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Michael, how are you doing, Kelly?
Michael Swigert, what's going on? Good, good. How are you today? Did this stir up your interest?
Well, when you mention global warming, one of my comments I make is that, do you remember, were you old enough to remember the first Earth Day?
No. Well, I don't know if I was old enough. It depends on when it was, but...
Well, it was April 22nd, 1970, and I was on the campus of NMSU as a reporter, and went to it and was told that I would be dead within 5 years.
From?
From global cooling.
Oh, I thought maybe you were smoking a cigarette or something.
No, I've never smoked.
All right.
Then, you know, a few years went by. I was working at KOB TV, and we were doing a story. We'd all be dead by 1980. And then in 1980, I owned the Lincoln County News, a weekly newspaper up by Rio Doso, and I had a story. We'd all be dead by 1985. It was going to now be global warming. And, Kelly, this has gone on for 46 years.
Mike, let me ask you something. The term Malthusianism, what is that? I'm going to test you here on the radio. What does Malthusianism represent?
I'm not versed in that.
Well, Thomas Malthus was the guy that said that the Earth was running out of food, and other stuff. And this is back in the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Malthus. Yeah, yeah. I probably mispronounced it.
And they were doing that in 1970 also. We'd all be dead by 1980 because there was too many people and not enough food. Of course, I was at an ag college, so that was a challenge for the ag college.
Well, is the danger now that people are like Thomas Malthus said, people are going to starve to death? Or, I mean, it seems to me in the developed world, the problem is people are going to eat themselves to death. All of these fear-mongering, apocalyptic warnings have turned out to be false.
Well, I feel like they're going to go mad on Facebook. I think that's about the only thing I'm pretty guaranteed. But here's the bottom line to all of it, which is you go back to the movies, like the movie The American President, and the big lines were we would all be dead by 2005, and we wouldn't be able to drive a car because we'd be out of fuel. And you know, so far, every climate alarmist has not been right about anything.
Right. And I mean, there appears to be this fatal attraction to the end of the world scenarios, not just in Christianity and Islam. In leftism is more committed to the visions of the destruction of the earth than any other group.
There's just something about they want to control people, and so you know we couldn't have cyclamates, and then you had to watch out for saccharin, and then you had to watch out for butter, and you needed to go to margarine, and then you had to watch out for margarine.
And what have we found out now that all of these elites are going to a high fat diet to try to live longer.
Well, yes, and I do understand it. I'm diabetic, so I understand the Atkins, and I think it actually works because I'm doing some of it myself. But regardless, our problem is I don't care what they think as long as they don't make me act. And liberty in our country is what you don't have to do. That tells you what you have liberty with.
Yeah. So how do we fight back?
Well, again, you have Congress, you have the presidency, and now you have the Supreme Court, and you can't fight. Well, let's see. What should we do? I guess we should go vote today, at least.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, I got to take a break. Anything else?
No, that's it. Have a good day. Go vote.
Great call. Thank you. All right, folks, get out there and vote. And I'm gonna find somebody that was really unfair because I know that Mike knows who Malthus is, but anybody who's been around this topic knows that there was this person before Karl Marx that came along, and Marx and this guy, the evolutionist, what's his name? Darwin. My mind is blanking on him because he's so painful. These people were all influenced with this idea. So what do we find out about, you know, the earth's overpopulated, right? What do we find out about advanced societies? They naturally limit birth. You want to slow down the reproduction on the earth, get everybody to the first world status. And we're not producing too little food. We're producing too much food. It's too cheap. 720, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell. I'm going to get into Thomas Malthus. I want to make sure it's a good clip tomorrow. here's a continuation just briefly with this idiot that gave the, I mean, this guy was so bad. It was just, it was painful. Hasan Minhaj, I don't know if he's trying to be part of Nicki Minaj's posse, but here's this guy, just terrible, terrible. The White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Wow. Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the series finale of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Oh, man. My name is Hasan Minhaj, or as I'll be known in a few weeks, number 830287. Who would have thought?
What this guy is so, is the beginning of this is just awful.
With everything going on in the country right now, that a Muslim would be standing on this stage for the 9th year in a row, baby. We had 8 years of Barack. What's another year? I see you, fam. I see you, Barry. What you doing right now? You jet skiing while the world burns? That's cool. That's cool. That's cool. For those of you who don't know me, I am a correspondent on The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Now I see some of you whispering to each other, what is Comedy Central?
This guy is so terrible, it's stunning. Here's Ben Stein's reaction to him.
A CNN host calling the anti-Trump jokes at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, quote, sickening. Listen.
We got to address the elephant that's not in the room. The leader of our country is not here. And that's because he lives in Moscow. It is a very long flight. Who is tweeting at 3 a.m. sober? Donald Trump, because it's 10 a.m. in Russia. Those are business hours. Mike Pence wanted to be here tonight, but his wife wouldn't let him because apparently one of you ladies is ovulating. So good job, ladies. Because of you, we couldn't hang out with Mike Pence. I do not see Steve Bannon. I do not see Steve Bannon. Not see Steve Bannon. Not see Steve Bannon.
Ben Stein himself joins me now. Ben, not very scintillating or high or clever wit there. I mean, you got upset at what they were saying. I mean, I just found the jokes there kind of tedious. What do you think?
Well, they're not just tedious. They're not funny. They're insulting. I mean, the last thing he did about Nazi Steve Bannon, I think, is close to libelous. If I were Steve Bannon, if I were a wealthy person, which I think he is, I would consider suing him for that. I mean, these jokes are not funny, insulting, wildly bereft of any shred of the truth. All they are is basically some not at all funny comedian who is selected for reasons I cannot quite understand, throwing up, spitting on, dumping on the president of the United States in front of a bunch of people who think they're revolutionary heroes when they're in fact very, very well paid capitalist stooges. And by the way, that's fine. I'm a capitalist too. I love being a capitalist, but they're capitalist stooges working for profit and wanting to have big houses in Georgetown and Foggy Bottom. And the idea that they think of themselves as revolutionaries and radicals defending the Constitution is just a joke. It's a joke.
Given that's what President Trump was up against, maybe Trump should have gone. We know he was the first not to go since Reagan was shot. Maybe he should have gone and just showed them, you know, because he's naturally funny. Did he set himself up by not going? Because we know that comedians historically have eviscerated presidents, and we know the president has been calling certain outlets fake news, the opposition party, the enemy of the people. I mean, not many people buy that line of thinking either. They think that's wrong. What do you think? Do you think President Trump should have gone?
Absolutely not. That guy, Mr. Minhaj, is a nobody. Nobody's going to remember him. Mr. Trump is the only real celebrity in the United States of America. Why should he share his celebrity status with these nobody, not funny, fake comedians? Now we have fake comedy, fake news and fake comedy. Look, I'm not a huge fan of Mr. Trump. I think he's made terrible mistakes. I think his tax plan is a serious mistake. But to have a guy come out, just insult, 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 make nothing humorous at all, just insult, insult, insult in front of a friendly audience that wants to insult the president of the United States. There's no progress there. There's nothing good going on there. There's just a 10th rate comedian elevated for some reason I can't understand to a position where he can insult the president of the United States. And these dopes in the audience think it's great. They think they're marching to the barricades. They're not marching to the barricades. The police are the heroes. The firefighters are the heroes. The military.
All right, so anyway, that sums up my feelings. Got some local news, 728, Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 on KOBE. We'll be right back. So I mentioned to you the issue of the ketogenic diet. Now, here's the thing. It's similar to Atkins. Similar to Atkins diet. Atkins is protein. Ketogenic is more fat-oriented, but they say that everything that we were told was mistaken. And so anyway, here's a little bit from Sleeper from Woody Allen. The premise of it is similar. He goes to sleep and wakes up like 200 years later and finds out everything that used to be bad for you is now good for you.
Fully recovered, except for a few minor kinks.
Has he asked for anything special?
Yes, this morning for breakfast. He requested something called wheat germ, organic honey, and tiger's milk.
Oh, yes, those are the charm substances that some years ago were felt to contain life-preserving properties.
You mean there was no deep fat, no steak or cream pies or hot fudge?
Those were thought to be unhealthy, precisely the opposite of what we now know to be true.
Incredible. Well, he wants to know where he is and what's going on.
I think it's time to tell him.
I'd be up and on my feet in 5 days. He was off by 199 years.
I know it's hard, Miles, but try to think of this experience as a miracle of science.
To me, a miracle of science is I go into the hospital for a minor operation, I come out the next day, my rent isn't 2,000 months overdue. That's a miracle of science. This is what I call a cosmic screwing. And where am I, anyhow? I mean, what happened to everybody? Where are all my friends?
You must understand that everyone you knew in the past has been dead nearly 200 years.
But they all ate organic rice.
You are now in the year 2173. Now, this is the central parallel of the American Federation. This district is what you probably call the southwestern United States. That was before it was destroyed by the war.
War?
Yes, according to history, over 100 years ago, a man named Albert Shanker got a hold of a nuclear warhead.
You will remain in hiding here for 2 weeks while we run a battery of tests on you. Then, when we think you've fully recovered your strength, we'll discuss the plan.
I still can't believe this. What do you mean hiding? Who am I hiding from? What do you mean hiding?
Well, you might as well know, Miles, that reviving you as we did was in strict opposition to government policy.
What we've done is highly illegal, Miles, and if we get caught, we'll be destroyed, along with you.
What do you mean destroyed? What do you mean destroyed?
Your brain will be electronically simplified.
My brain? It's my second favorite organ.
Resistors to mind reprogramming will be exterminated for the good of the state.
What kind of government you guys got here? This is worse than California.
There is a growing underground, Miles. And someday the revolution will come and we can overthrow our great leader.
Look, you've got to be kidding. I want to go back to sleep. If I don't get at least 600 G's, I'm grouchy all day.
We're taking him along too fast. He's still emotionally unstable.
I can't believe this. I go into the hospital for a lousy ulcer operation. I lay around on a bird's eye wrapper for 200 G's. I wake up suddenly. I'm on the 10 most wanted list.
He's ranting. We'd better tranquilize him.
I knew it was too good to be true. I parked right near the hospital.
Now, here. You smoke this, and be sure you get the smoke deep down into your lungs.
I don't smoke.
It's tobacco. It's one of the healthiest things for your body. Now, go ahead. You need all the strength you can get.
You know, I bought Polaroid at 7. It's probably up millions by now.
All right, so that's a little bit from Sleeper. And so here's from your ketogenic diet. Check it out, guys and gals.
Another typical fad diet? Actually, it's been around for a while now, and people get some pretty good results from it. So what exactly is so different? Well, most of these fad diets you find simply tells you to eat a certain type of food and avoid those certain type of food, and voila, you're on your way to losing 100 pounds. Of course, a lot of them don't really work and makes very little sense. What's special about the keto diet, short for ketogenic, is that it changes how your body feels, and most importantly, how your body uses energy by placing it into a state known as ketosis. And this is where all the magic happens. In ketosis, your body starts utilizing substances known as ketone bodies, which are produced by the breakdown of your body fat triglycerides. Quick science, first understand that your body loves glucose. If it has glucose on hand, it's going to use that first for energy. In a keto diet, the amount of carbohydrates you consume goes down, therefore the amount of glucose goes down too. In order to combat this, your body uses stored glucose in the form of glycogen, but that's going to run out as well. The next step is to convert a substance known as oxaloacetate in the liver into glucose. At the same time this is happening, your body is bringing down your fat into free fatty acids and sending it to your liver to metabolize another important substance known as acetylcholine. Acetylcholine is then placed into the Krebs cycle in the liver cells to produce energy, but it can't do that right now. Remember that oxaloacetate that was being broken down into glucose? Well, oxaloacetate is also needed for the Krebs cycle to function. Now your liver has all these acetylcholine lying around, so it decides to break it down into two substances called acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate, which are known as ketone bodies. It sends them into the bloodstream where other body cells pick them up, convert the ketone bodies back into acetylcholine into the Krebs cycle, and energy is produced. This is also really good news for your brain, since even though your brain loves glucose too, it can function on ketone bodies as well. In fact, ketone bodies provide more energy per gram for the brain versus glucose, so win-win for your mental capacity. Now, so far, everything sounds good. Your body no longer relies heavily on carbohydrates, it burns a lot of fat, and your brain functions pretty well. But of course, there's always a catch, a number of catches in this case. Studies show that power output decreases in cases where maximum intensity is required. This makes sense because the breakdown of glucose via glycolysis plays a crucial role in providing immediate energy for your body. With no glucose and glycogen in your body, intense workouts become a lot harder. And the lack of glycogen also affects muscle growth, since there's a strong positive connection between glycogen availability and protein synthesis. Take the glycogen away and the process slows down. Oh, and there's the keto flu, something that happens when your body starts transitioning off of carbs and rely more heavily on ketone bodies. The keto flu, which isn't an actual flu, contains symptoms such as headaches, fatigue.
All right, the basic idea is that we've got this way of eating that is now healthier. And believe it or not, it's based on fat. You can't believe it. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, to Kelly. All right, I've mentioned this many, many times. If you call in during a clip because I'm running my own board, you're not going to be able to hear me. So I'll put you on hold and wait till we're done with the clip. But all right, we'll take a break here, and then I've got a guest, a new sponsor, really an old sponsor who's come to his senses and come back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, 740 on the button. Be right back. The Sam Kane Law Firm here that is now specializing in personal injury. We've got Sam next to me. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Kelly.
How's it going?
Going pretty good. I'm here with my son, Jonah. We just grabbed some Starbucks, and we thought we would come down and sponsor the show. You look like you need a little help.
I certainly do. Anybody else wants to sponsor, I need help.
I noticed that your trousers were a little bit higher than normal.
Well, I got tired of the droopy. I got tired of people complaining about my butt crack. So, but all right. So, when should somebody call an attorney for a personal injury?
Immediately. Usually, it's after you've been involved in a car accident, a motorcycle accident, wrongful. If you've been hit by a truck, a semi truck. Your best bet is to contact an attorney. That doesn't necessarily mean myself, but the quicker you can get legal advice, obviously you want to make sure your medical needs are being taken care of. But the quicker you can call an attorney, the better off you are. The last thing you want to do is give a recorded statement to an insurance adjuster. And remember, when you go into when you have your initial visit, if you can, make sure that you describe all of the things that are bothering you. It's very difficult to go back and try to convince an insurance adjuster of an injury that wasn't disclosed either to the ambulance personnel or to the treating physician in the emergency
room. Well, let's talk a little bit about evidence. When's the best time to gather evidence?
Well, you're continuously gathering evidence throughout the case, but probably within the initial 15 days as far as the accident report and a reconstruction of the accident.
So you've got a car wreck and you've got all the pieces from the cars in the road. You've got the cars out in the road, the skid marks and everything. That's the time to get film or pictures to help whoever is going to take your case and to call an attorney. And sometimes the attorney can send an investigator out.
That's right, Kelly. If you're on a stretcher, your best thing to do is go ahead and dismount. Don't get into the ambulance and start taking pictures. I'm just kidding.
You make it sound like the Olympics.
But absolutely, yeah. You want to contact an attorney after you have received the necessary medical care, and that way they can go ahead and have their private investigative team come out, measure the accident, and to preserve the evidence for trial.
Now, there are some injuries that don't really rise up or let themselves be known for a little while after the accident, correct? Because the shock?
That's correct. And so, like I was saying earlier, when you go into your initial visit, if something is even remotely bothering you, and you might think to yourself, well, this is going to heal over time. I've got a toothache. It may not be related to the accident. You want to disclose that so it's noted in the initial record. So if it's later, it later starts to bother you, which is often the case. If you've made a record of it, it's easier to support that and to get paid damages for that. Now if it wasn't in existence at the time, then you have to just, obviously you're not going to be in a position to disclose it. But we would still try to get you compensated for the specific damages.
The address is 1018-1018 East Amador Avenue. And how will people know if they're at the right place?
Kelly, we've got a big bull out in front of our office, and it's...
What's it made out of?
To be honest with you, and I don't want to say something.
Is it plaster of Paris?
It, I'd like to say it's bronze, but I'm not sure I could have afforded a bronze bull. But it's a pretty solid material.
It's
but
metal.
It's right there. Can
the kids crawl in it?
Yeah, yeah.
And if they fall off, who should they call for? Because they can't really call you.
Well, they can call Kelly O'Connell. He's been looking for that. But yeah, you could bring your whole family by, jump on the bull, take some pictures of it.
Especially if you're pagan, it could be an important religious moment. 575-526-5263, 526-5263. That's Sam King. Thanks for sponsoring the show.
Thank you, Kelly. We believe in you, man.
I do appreciate that. We'll take a little break, folks. And thanks to the Sam Cain Law Firm. Remember, for all your personal injury needs, we'll be right back. Okay, so here is, now think about this, ketogenic diet as a key to recovery for cancer and diabetes. I'm just telling you what I'm picking up here, but I thought you might find it interesting. And this is from CBN News.
Dr. Fred Hatfield is an impressive guy. He's a powerlifting champion, author, millionaire businessman with a beautiful wife. But he'll tell you his greatest accomplishment is killing his cancer, just in the nick of time.
The doctors gave me 3 months to live because of widespread metastatic cancer in my skeletal structure. 3 months. Three different doctors told me that same thing.
It's a horrible, horrible feeling to have someone tell you that the person that you love only has 3 months to live and you're not going to be with him anymore.
While Fred was preparing to die, he heard about an anti-cancer diet, also known as metabolic therapy. With nothing to lose, he gave it a try and was shocked when it actually worked.
And the cancer was gone completely. To this day, there's no trace of it, and it's been over a year.
Although it wasn't easy, Fred stopped eating carbohydrates because carbohydrates turn into glucose inside your body. Cancer cells love glucose and need it so badly that if you stop giving it to them, they die.
And it just absolutely amazes me that medical science is just now finding this out.
Fred's recovery was not a surprise to Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. His team of scientists at the University of South Florida study metabolic therapy. When they removed carbohydrates from the diets of lab mice, the mice survived highly aggressive metastatic cancer, even better than when they were treated with chemotherapy.
We have dramatically increased survival with metabolic therapy. So we think it's important to get this information out.
And it's not just lab mice. He's also seen similar success in people, lots of them.
I've been in correspondence with a number of people, probably at least a dozen people, and over the last year and a half to 2 years, and all of them are still alive, so despite the odds. And so this is very encouraging.
All cells, including cancer cells, are fueled by glucose. But if you deprive them of glucose, they switch to the alternate fuel ketone bodies, all except cancer cells. A defect prevents them from making the switch to using ketone bodies as fuel, and therefore cancer cells can only survive on glucose. All other cells can use either glucose or ketone bodies.
Your normal cells have the metabolic flexibility to adapt from using glucose to using ketone bodies. But cancer cells lack this metabolic flexibility. So we can exploit that.
People like Fred, who deprive their cells of glucose and fuel them with ketone bodies instead, eat what's known as a ketogenic diet. It consists of almost zero carbohydrates, but lots of natural protein and fat.
You can go online and there's just cookbooks and, you know, it's clean eating, just very clean eating. None of the sugars, the salts, the trash food.
Natural proteins are ones in their original form, but processed meats like cold cuts and hot dogs are off limits because often carbohydrates have been added to them. Natural fats are in their original form, like olive oil, avocados, nuts, and also coconut oil. But stay away from trans fats, such as shortening or margarine, which are man-made.
Some people are afraid to try the ketogenic diet because they think all this fat is bad for their heart. But more doctors are now saying natural fat is actually good for you, even natural saturated fat like coconut oil and butter.
Doctors like cardiologist Steven Sinatra.
Is cholesterol the major cause of heart disease? Absolutely not.
In his book, The Great Cholesterol Myth, he says the real cause of heart disease is inflammation, which comes from eating too many carbohydrates.
We need to coach our patients and empower them about the dangers of sugar. Unfortunately, they're not hearing that. They hear in the converse, the dangers of fat. Fat is healthy for you.
All right, so here's a little Gaffigan to take you out. A little stand-up. And this is from Jimmy Fallon.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I don't know if you can tell by looking at me, but I'm a man. No, I am. It's easier to be a guy, really. I mean, there's sexism, but just the day-to-day life of being a woman, honestly, it looks too hard. Just hair, what a woman has to deal with hair, with cut and color and goos and potions. It's like, what does a guy have to do with his hair? Not have a mullet. That's all a guy has to do is not have a mullet, A plus. And yet there's still some guys that can't pull that off. They're not talking about my mullet, are they? It's easier to be a guy. Makeup, women wear makeup. Most guys don't even wash their hands. You see it in public restrooms. Like, where are you going? They're like, I'm not serving food here. A bra, an extra piece of clothing? I think women shouldn't wear bras, and then they should jog by my apartment. Because I'm a feminist like Beyonce. My wife loves that joke. Obviously, women are doing none of these things to please or impress a man, but some of it's self-inflicted. Like that eyebrow thing? That's on you, ladies. I mean, there is not a man on this planet that's sitting there going, I'm looking for a woman who's removed 90% of her eyebrow hair. That's what I find a turn on. I don't even know what some of these ladies are going for. I want to look constantly surprised. Like, I'm about to eat a baby. My wife is a woman. She is. She's very attractive and thin. I look like I had two wives and I ate one of them. She is amazing. We do everything together. She's my writing partner. She's intelligent. She's creative. She is amazing. I mean, when we're together, I won't let her drive. That's not sexism. I just don't want to die. Yeah, I mean, she can drive my kids around. I don't care about that. But if I'm in the car, no way. She's an incredible, probably the most impressive thing my wife can do is her ability to remember absolutely every horrible thing I've ever done. And she'll just bring it up. We'll be watching TV and she'll be like, remember that time you humiliated me when we went out to dinner? Now I do. I must have blocked it out searching for self-esteem. I don't, you know, thank you. I don't want to misrepresent her. She's very forgiving. It's just the forgetting part. You know, I mean, we all aspire to be forgiving. Pope John Paul II forgave the guy who tried to assassinate him. I mean, granted, he was the Pope. It's not you could be like, let's torture this bastard. He was the Pope, so he had to forgive him. But he went to his jail cell and forgave the guy. But then he left. It's not like then he lived with the guy. Like, if the Pope lived with the guy, we would have seen how long that forgiveness would have lasted. Pope, your turn to do the dishes. Didn't you shoot me?
All right, so Jim Gaffigan, just listening to the guy, you know, basically everything that he says is funny. That's one of the things that separates him from other comedians. He's top shelf. Take you out with some West Montgomery Caravan. Look into the ketogenic diet, especially if you have issues with, of course, check with your doctor first, but it could be an answer for some of your health issues. And there were a lot of testimonials that I saw about losing a lot of weight while eating fat. Isn't that crazy? Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Have a wonderful day. Ciao. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. The